Om Agnate Mirandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Chakshu Samilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Upakadamai Hamdalati Sapandantikam Vanjakapaturu Vyascha Pipasindu Vaibhacha Patitanam Pabinebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Beginning the fourth canto. Now this fourth canto very nice. It's divided into several very clear and distinct parts. Prabhupada will describe a little, a part of the overview of the fourth canto and its purport to the first text. Maitreya Vacha Manos Tu Shatarupayam Tisra Kanya Sajajnere Akuti Devahutischa Prasuti Vishuta. Sri Maitreya said, Swayambhuva Manu begot three daughters and his wife Satarupa, and their names were Akuti, Devahuti, and Prasuti. So we've completed the third canto, which spoke of one of the daughters of Swayambhuva Manu, Devahuti, in the last, perhaps the last third of the chapter, or quarter of the canto, spoke about how Swayambhuva Manu gave his daughter Devahuti in charity to Kadamba, not Kadamba, but Kardama Muni. And Kadama Muni and Devahuti had eight daughters and one son, Kapila Muni. And the last chapters of the third canto of the teachings of Kapila Muni, who was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Far prior to that, the third canto was discussing the creation, the secondary creation, how the creation proceeded from Lord Brahma. Prior to that was the Sarga, or the primary creation. Atya Sarga Vashagastra Stanam Poshanam Uttaya. So the primary creation, or the Sarga of creation, is a creation that comes directly from the Lord. It is the direct creation of the energies, the building blocks of the universe. Then Lord Brahma takes those foundational energies and from them, using the blueprint or documentation of the Lord, he creates the universe. So when he's trying to populate the universe, there is the first of his creations is the four Kumaras who refused. This is right in the beginning of the third canto, who refused to engage in married life and having children, and that makes Lord Brahma angry, and from his anger Rudra is born. And then one after another, the different progenitors are born, and the different parts, required parts of the universal creation are created by Lord Brahma. But the creation isn't proceeding quickly enough, according to his desire. And then when he creates Swayambhuva Manu and his wife Satarupa, who immediately agree to continue the population of the universe, then Lord Brahma feels confident that the population, the populating of the universe will go on. And then there is a tangent. Of course, it's not a tangent, but Swayambhuva Manu requests Brahma to say where should he begin his duties, and the place where he's supposed to begin them is the earth, but the earth has fallen down into the Garbhadak ocean. So Varahadev is born of Lord Brahma, from the nostril of Brahma. Brahma thinks, How should we rescue the earth? And he takes shelter of the Lord. And then Lord Varahadev takes his birth. He invents himself. And then after that, there is more about the creation, and then the continuation. And then there's the story of the four Kumaras and how they were, how the enmity developed between Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, and the Varaha and Varahadev, and why Varahadev killed him. Then the story of the four Kumaras is told, and how they're cursed, etc. And then the continuation in this last quarter or third of the third canto was about the line of Swayambhuvamanu. So his daughter Devahuti is given to Kardama Muni, and then as a result of that marriage, Kapila Dev is born. So in this first chapter of the fourth canto, the topic goes back to the population of the universe and what happens to the lineage of Swayambhuvamanu, how they increase the population of the universe. So he had three daughters and two sons. The three daughters we're going to hear about in this chapter and what happened to them, and something about them in the next several chapters in the pastime, in the story of Daksha, the Daksha Jaga. So we're going to hear about the three daughters who were Akuti, Devahuti, and Prasuti. And then there were also two sons of Swayambhuvamanu, whose name were Uttanapad and Priyavrata. So the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam deals with the lineage coming from Uttanapad, including Dhruva Maharaj and Prithu Maharaj, and Maharaj Prichini Varajai and the Prachetis. And then the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, quite a bit of it deals with the lineage coming from Priyavrata. And in this first chapter again, the lineage coming from Swayambhuvamanu through the three daughters are described. So we'll hear this verse. Sri Maitreya said, Swayambhuvamanu begot three daughters and his wife Satarupa, and their names were Akuti, Devahuti, and Prasuti, three daughters, and their lineage is going to be discussed in this chapter, and then in the remaining in the next chapters about Sati, one of the daughters of Devahuti and Kardama, and her marriage to Lord Shiva, and the Daksha Jaga comes up in that, and then after that the lineage of Uttanapad. So here's Prabhupada's purport. First of all, Prabhupada explains or says, let us offer our respectful obeisances into our spiritual master, Om Vishnupad Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada, by whose order I am engaged in this Herculean task of writing commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam, as the Bhaktivinoda purports. By his grace we have finished three cantos already, and we are just trying to begin the fourth canto. By his divine grace, let us offer our respectful obeisances unto Lord Chaitanya, who began this Krishna consciousness movement of Bhagavad Dharma 500 years ago. And through his grace, let us offer our obeisances to the six Goswamis. And then, let us offer our obeisances to Radha and Krishna, the spiritual couple who enjoy eternally in Vrindavan with their cowherd boys and damsels in Brajabhumi. Let us also offer our respectful obeisances to all the devotees and eternal servitors of the Supreme Lord. So that's how Prabhupada begins the fourth canto, obeisances to the superiors, his superiors, whom by their grace he has completed three cantos, and he will continue translating and writing his commentary, Bhaktivedanta purports commentary on the Bhagavatam in English. In this fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there are 31 chapters. And all these chapters describe the secondary creation by Brahma and the Manus. The Supreme Lord Himself does the real creation by agitating His material energy. And then, by His order, Brahma, the first living creature in the universe, attempts to create the different planetary systems and their inhabitants, expanding the population through His progeny, like Manu and the other progenitors of living entities, who work perpetually under the order of the Supreme Lord. In the first chapter of this fourth canto, there are descriptions of the three daughters of Swayambhuva Manu and their descendants. The next six chapters describe the sacrifice performed by King Daksha and how it was spoiled. So that'll bring us up to chapter 7. And if Krishna allows, in the next 4 weeks that we have classes, we'll cover those seven chapters. Then, thereafter, the activities of Maharaj Dhruva are described in five chapters. So a wonderful pastime, the story of Dhruva Maharaj, who is the son of Uttanapad, one of the sons of Swayambhuva Manu. Then in 11 chapters, the activities of King Prithu are described. And the next 8 chapters are devoted to the activities of the Pracheta kings and their father, Prachini Bharishad. So that's the 31 chapters of this canto. So there's Daksha. First, there's this genealogical table here of the three daughters that describe the descendants of the three daughters, then the Daksha Jagya, then Dhruva Maharaj, then Prithu Maharaj, and Prachini Bharishad, and the Prachetas. And these are all the descendants of Maharaj Uttanapad, the son of Swayambhuva Manu. As described in the first verse of this chapter, Swayambhuva Manu had three daughters named Akuti, Devahuti, and Prasuti. Of these three daughters, one daughter, Devahuti, has already been described along with her husband, Kardama Muni, and her son, Kapila Muni. In this chapter, the descendants of the first daughter, Akuti, will specifically be described. Swayambhuva Manu was the son of Brahma. Brahma had many other sons, but Manu's name is specifically mentioned first because he was a great devotee of the Lord. In this verse, there is also the word cha, indicating that beside the three daughters mentioned, Swayambhuva Manu also had two sons. Now we'll hear about the descendants from the second verse to the eighth verse. We'll hear about the descendants, which is quite interesting, of one of the daughters whose name is Akuti. And it's specifically interesting that almost in Swayambhuva Manu's family, the Lord incarnates quite a few times. So we've heard about him incarnating as Kapila Muni. Now we're going to hear about another incarnation of the Lord called Jagya. Akuti had two brothers, but in spite of her brothers, King Swayambhuva Manu handed her over to Prajapati Ruchi on the condition that the son born of her be returned to Manu as his son. This he did in consultation with his wife Satarupa. So this is something that's already somewhat interesting, how usually someone who has a daughter or a son, when they get married, the daughter or the son get married, the parents are happy when they have children because then they become grandparents and they watch their grandchildren growing up. But here, Swayambhuva Manu gave his daughter Akuti to Prajapati Ruchi under the condition that grandchild, when they had grandchildren, he would not be brought up by the children, by Ruchi and Prasuti, Akuti. That grandchild would be brought up directly by Swayambhuva Manu himself. So why did he want that? Because sometimes a man, if he hasn't conceived with his wife any male children, then he will make that arrangement that his grandson, he will take care of him for the thrill of bringing up their own son and giving him the specific training that he wants. But in this case, it's not applicable because Swayambhuva Manu already had two sons, Uttanapad and Priyavrata. So what could be the reason why he particularly wanted that grandson of his to be brought up by him? So Prabhupada explains this, quoting Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments in this connection that King Manu knew that the Supreme Personality of Godhead would take his birth in the womb of Akuti. Therefore, in spite of having two sons, he wanted the particular son born of Akuti because he was ambitious to have the Supreme Personality of Godhead appear as his son and grandson. Manu is the lawgiver of mankind, and since he personally executed the Putrika Dharma, we may accept that such a system may be adopted by mankind also. Thus, even though one has a son, if one wants to have a particular son from one daughter, one may give one's daughter in charity on that condition. That is the opinion of Srila Jiva Goswami. So, this is what's going to happen. So Ruchi, who was very powerful in his brahminical qualifications, and was appointed one of the Prajapatis, or the progenitors of the living entities, begot one son and one daughter by his wife, Akuti. Of the two children born of Akuti, the male child was directly an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his name was Jagya, which is another name of Lord Vishnu. The female child was a partial incarnation of Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, the eternal consort of Lord Vishnu. Swayambhuva Manu very gladly brought home the beautiful boy named Jagya, and Ruchi, his son-in-law, kept with him the daughter Dakshina. That was her name. The lord of the ritualistic performance of Jagya later married Dakshina, who was anxious to have the personality of Godhead as her husband. And in this wife, the Lord also was very much pleased to beget 12 children. So this is already the grandchildren of Swayambhuva Manu. Yeah, this is the grandchildren, what is it, great-grandchildren rather. The 12 boys born of Jagya and Dakshina were named Tosha, Patosha, Santosha, Bhadra, Shanta, Idashpati, Idma, Kavi, Vibhu, Svana, Sudev, and Rochan. During the time of Swayambhuva Manu, these sons also became the demigods collectively named the Tushitas. Marichi became the head of the 7 Richis, and Jagya became the king of the demigods, Indra. So these were the positions that they assumed in the society of devas, or the society of demigods. They were individuals, they were persons, but they took up positions as well. Now, Swayambhuva Manu, so that described the children of Akuti, one of the 3 daughters of Manu. Swayambhuva Manu's 2 sons, Priyavrata and Uttanapad, became very powerful kings, and their sons and grandsons spread all over the 3 worlds during that period. My dear son, Maitreya says to Vidura, Swayambhuva Manu handed over his very dear daughter Devahuti to Kardama Muni. So he's not going to talk at this point about the children of the 2 sons. And he's going to mention something about Devahuti, that daughter. He handed over his daughter Devahuti to Kardama Muni. I've already spoken to you about them, and you have heard about them almost in full. Swayambhuva Manu handed over his daughter Prasuti, so there's 2 more daughters left to describe. Prasuti and Akuti's been described, and then Prasuti's being described, and Devahuti's already been described. Swayambhuva Manu handed over his daughter Prasuti to the son of Brahma named Daksha, who is also one of the progenitors of the living entities. The descendants of Daksha spread throughout the 3 worlds. So he's going later on in the chapters, beginning in text 47, he's going to describe the descendants of Daksha and Prasuti. But now he's going to talk about the descendants of Kardama Muni and Devahuti, because when before Kapila Muni was born, there were eight daughters born. So he's going to describe the descendants from those eight daughters in so many verses up to text 45. You have already been informed about the nine daughters, make that nine, not eight, of Kardama Muni, who are handed over to nine different sages. I shall now describe the descendants of those nine daughters. Please hear from me. Kardama Muni's daughter, Kala, who was married to Marichi, gave birth to two children whose names were Kashyap and Punim. Their descendants were spread all over the world. So later on we're going to hear, or we've actually heard some already, how Kashyapa Muni, through his wife Diti, gave birth to Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. So this same Kashyapa was born of Kardama Muni's daughter Kala and Marichi. My dear Vidura, of the two sons, Kashyap and Purnim, Purnima begot three children named Viraj, Vishvag, and Devakulya. Of these three, Devakulya was the water which washed the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, and which later on transformed into the Ganges of the heavenly planets. Anusuya, now this is an interesting little story that comes. Anusuya, this is one of the other daughters of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. So one was named Kala, another one is named Anusuya. Now Anusuya is famous. She's given to Atri Muni. Anusuya is famous due to her chastity, acting as a very faithful and chaste wife. Anusuya, the wife of Atri Muni, gave birth to three very famous sons: Soma, who is the moon god, Dattatreya, and Durvas, who are partial representations of Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, and Lord Brahma. Soma was a partial representation of Lord Brahma, Dattatreya was a partial representation of Lord Vishnu, and Durvas was a partial representation of Lord Shiva. After hearing this, Anusuya gave birth to these three partial representations of the three major demigods, Vidura inquired for Maitreya. My dear master, how is it that the three deities, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, who are the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of the whole creation, became the offspring of the wife of Atri Muni? Maitreya said, he's going to tell this pastime. When Lord Brahma ordered Atri Muni to create generations after marrying Anusuya, Atri Muni and his wife went to perform severe austerities in the valley of the mountain known as Riksha. In that mountain valley flows a river named Nirvindya. On the bank of the river are many ashok trees and other plants full of palash flowers, and there is always the sweet sound of water flowing from a waterfall. The husband and wife reached that beautiful place. There the great sage concentrated his mind by the yogic breathing exercises. And there, by controlling all attachments, he remained standing on one leg only, eating nothing but air, and stood there on one leg for 100 years. He was thinking, "May the Lord of the universe, of whom I have taken shelter, kindly be pleased to offer me a son exactly like him." So he was praying to the Jagadishwar. The Jagadishwar means the Lord or the Ishwar, the controller of the Jagat or the universe. So he's saying, "Please give me a son exactly like yourself." It was Prabhupada's purport. It appears that the great sage Atri Muni had no specific idea of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, he must have been conversant with the Vedic information that there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the creator of the universe from whom everything emanated, who maintains his created manifestation, and in whom the entire manifestation is conserved after dissolution. Yatova imani bhutani, from Taittiriya Upanishad. The Vedic mantras give us information of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Atri Muni concentrated his mind upon that Supreme Personality of Godhead, even without knowing his name, just to beg from him a child exactly on his level. This kind of devotional service, in which knowledge of God's name is lacking, is also described in Bhagavad Gita, where the Lord says that four kinds of men with backgrounds of pious activities come to him asking for what they need. Atri Muni wanted a son exactly like the Lord, and therefore he is not supposed to have been a pure devotee, because he had a desire to be fulfilled, and that desire was material. Although he wanted a son exactly like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this desire was material because he did not want the Personality of Godhead himself, but only a child exactly like him. If he had desired the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his child, he would have been completely free of material desire, because he would have wanted the Supreme Absolute Truth. But because he wanted a similar child, his desire was material. Thus Atri Muni cannot be counted among the pure devotees. While Atri Muni was engaged in these severe austerities, a blazing fire came out of his head by virtue of his breathing exercise. And that fire was seen by the three principal deities of the three worlds. At that time, the three deities approached the hermitage of Atri Muni, accompanied by the denizens of the heavenly planets, such as the celestial beauties, the Gandharvas, the Siddhas, the Vidyadharas, and the Nagas. Thus they entered the ashram of the great sage, who had become famous because of his austerities. The sage was standing on one leg. But as soon as he saw that the three deities had appeared before him, he was so pleased to see them all together that despite great difficulty he approached them on one leg, because he had just been standing there on his one leg, so somehow or another, still on one leg, he approached the three deities. He was overjoyed that they had come. Thereafter, he began to offer prayers to the three deities who were seated on different carriers, a bull, a swan, and Garuda, and who held in their hands a drum, kushagras, and a discus, chakra. The sage offered them his respects by falling down like a stick. Fell down with the dandavas. Atri Muni was greatly pleased to see that the three devas were gracious towards him. His eyes were dazzled by the effulgence of their bodies, and therefore he closed his eyes for the time being. But since his heart was already attracted by the deities, somehow or other he gathered his senses, and with folded hands and sweet words, he began to offer prayers to the predominating deities of the universe. The great sage Atri said, "O Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, and Lord Shiva, you have divided yourself into three bodies by accepting the three modes of material nature, as you do in every millennium for the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the cosmic manifestation. I offer my respectful obeisances unto all of you, and I beg to inquire whom of you three I have called by my prayer." So he's saying he called for the Jagadishwar, the Lord, the Master of the universe, and three deities came. So he pleased them. He was so happy to see Brahma, Vishnu, and Lord Shiva. And he asked them, "Okay, I have called for Jagadishwar, the Supreme Lord. Now which one of you is the Supreme Lord?" Srila Prabhupada's purport. Atri Rishi called for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Jagadisha, the Lord of the universe. The Lord must exist before the creation. Otherwise, how could he be its Lord? If someone constructs a big building, this indicates that he must have existed before the building was constructed. Therefore, the Supreme Lord, the Creator of the universe, must be transcendental to the material modes of nature. But it is known that Vishnu takes charge of the mode of goodness, Brahma takes charge of the mode of passion, and Lord Shiva takes charge of the mode of ignorance. Therefore, Atri Muni said, "That Jagadishara, the Lord of the universe, must be one of you. But since three of you have appeared, I cannot recognize whom I have called if you are also kind, please let me know who is actually Jagadisha, the Lord of the universe. In fact, Atri Rishi was doubtful about the constitutional position of the Supreme Lord Vishnu, but he was quite certain that the Lord of the universe cannot be one of the creatures created by Maya. His very inquiry about whom he had called indicated that he was in doubt about the constitutional position of the Lord. Therefore, he prayed to all three, kindly let me know who is the transcendental Lord of the universe. He was certain, of course, that not all of them could be the Lord, but the Lord of the universe was one of the three. Text 28. I called for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, desiring a son like him, and I thought of him only. But although he is far beyond the mental speculation of man, all three of you have come here. Kindly let me know how you have come, for I'm greatly bewildered about this. Upon hearing Atri Muni speak in that way, the three great deities smiled, and they replied in the following sweet words. The three deities told Atri Muni, "Dear Brahmana, you are perfect in your determination, and therefore, as you have decided, so it will happen. It will not happen otherwise. We are all the same person upon whom you are meditating, and therefore, we have all come to you." Prabhupada's purport. Atri Muni specifically thought of the personality of Godhead, the Lord of the universe, although he had no clear idea of the Lord of the universe, nor of his specific form. Mahavishnu, from whose breathing millions of universes emanate, and into whom they are again withdrawn, may be accepted as the Lord of the universe. Dravadakshai Vishnu, from whose abdomen sprouted the lotus flower, which is the birthplace of Brahma, may also be considered the Lord of the universe. Similarly, Chiradakshai Vishnu, who is the supersoul of all living entities, may also be considered the Lord of the universe. Then, under the order of Chiradakshai Vishnu, the Vishnu form within the universe, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva may also be accepted as the Lords of the universe. Vishnu is the Lord of the universe because he is the maintainer. Similarly, Brahma creates the different planetary systems and the population, so he may be also considered the Lord of the universe. Well, Lord Shiva, who is ultimately the destroyer of the universe, may also be considered its Lord. Therefore, since Atri Muni did not specifically mention whom he wanted, all three, Brahma, Vishnu, and Lord Shiva, came before him. They said, "Since you are thinking of having a son exactly like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord of the universe, your determination will be fulfilled." In other words, one determination is fulfilled according to the strength of one's devotion. Now that sentence is interesting. One's determination is fulfilled according to the strength of one's devotion. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, "Yanti deva vata devan pitrin yanti pitrin vata." If one is attached to a particular demigod, one is promoted to the abode of that demigod. If one is attached to the pitas or forefathers, one is promoted to their planet. And similarly, if one is attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, one is promoted to the abode of Lord Krishna. Atri Muni had no clear conception of the Lord of the universe. Therefore, the three presiding deities, who are actually the lords of the universe in three departments of the modes of nature, all came before him. Now, according to the strength of his determination for his son, his desire will be fulfilled by the grace of the Lord. So actually, these three deities, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, they are carrying the energy of the Supreme Lord. Not exactly like that, because Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Lord, but Lord Brahma is the Gunavatar. He is empowered by the mode of passion to create. Lord Vishnu is the Lord of the maintenance, the mode of goodness, and Lord Shiva is the embodiment and the empowered. He's the Lord, the Supreme Lord, takes these forms to perform the functions of the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe. So the three deities continue to say, "You will have sons who will represent a partial manifestation of our potency. And because we desire all good fortune for you, those sons will glorify your reputation throughout the world. Thus, while the couple looked on, the three deities, Brahma, Vishnu, and Mahisha, disappeared from that place after bestowing upon Atrimuni the benediction. Thereafter, from the partial representation of Brahma, the moon god was born of them. From the partial representation of Vishnu, the great mystic Dattatreya was born. And from the partial representation of Shankar, Lord Shiva, Durvasa was born. Now you may hear from me of the many sons of Angira. So that was, the children born of the daughters of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. So next is, so there's going on for 10, 15 verses. So text 46, there's a description of the other children born of the daughters of Devahuti and Kardama Muni. And here's text 46. My dear Vidura, the population of the universe was thus increased by the descendants of these sages and the daughters of Kardama. Anyone who hears the description of this dynasty with faith will be relieved from all sinful reactions. Another of Manu's daughters, named as Prasuti, married the son of Brahma, named Daksha. Daksha begot 16 very beautiful daughters with lotus-like eyes in his wife Prasuti. Of these 16 daughters, 13 were given in marriage to Dharma. Who is Dharma? Yamaraj. And one daughter was given to Agni. 13, one given to Agni, so that's 14. And that makes two more, 15 and 16. One of the remaining two daughters was given in charity to Pitriloka, where she resides very amicably, and the other was given to Lord Shiva, who is the deliverer of sinful persons from material entanglement. The names of the 13 daughters of Daksha were given to Dharma: Shraddha, Maitri, Daya, Shanti, Tushti, Pushti, Kriya, Unati, Budhi, Medha, Titiksha, Ri, and Murti. These 13 daughters produced the following sons: Shraddha gave birth to Subha, Maitri produced Prasada, Daya gave birth to Abhay, Shanti gave birth to Sukha, Tushti gave birth to Muda, Pushti gave birth to Smaya, Kriya gave birth to Yoga, Unati gave birth to Dharpa, Buddha gave birth to Artha, Medha gave birth to Smriti, Titiksha gave birth to Chema, and Ri gave birth to Prasraya. Murti, a reservoir of all respectable qualities, gave birth to Sri Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the next seven verses describe the birth of Narayan, who is Rishi, who is also the Lord. So all these incarnations are coming in Swayambhuva Manu's family from his daughters. On the occasion of the appearance of Narayan, so this is from Murti, one of the daughters of Kardama and Devuti. On the occasion of the appearance of Narayan, so he'll be actually discussed later on in the Bhagavatam 2, in the 11th or 12th canto, I think. On the occasion of the appearance of Narayan, the entire world was filled with joy. Everyone's mind became tranquil, and thus in all directions, the air, the rivers, and the mountains became pleasant. In the heavenly planets, bands began to play, and they showered flowers from the sky. The pacified sages chanted Vedic prayers. The denizens of heaven, known as the Gandharvas and the Kinaras, sang, and the beautiful damsels of the heavenly planets danced. And in this way, at the time of the appearance of Narayan, all signs of good fortune were visible. Just at that time, great demigods like Brahma also offered their respectful prayers. The demigods said, so there are two prayers that they said. The demigods said, let us offer our respectful obeisances unto the transcendental personality of Godhead, who created as his external energy this cosmic manifestation, which is situated in him as the air and clouds are situated in space. So he is the creator, the Lord creates the entirety of the cosmos, and we've already heard how he does this in the second and third canto. And so this is, they're offering obeisances to the Lord, who is the creator of the external energy, the cosmic manifestation. And that Lord has now appeared in the form of Naranarayan Rishi in the house of Dharma. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. The universal form of the Lord is the cosmic manifestation, which is an exhibition of the external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In space there are innumerable varieties of planets and also the air, and in the air there are variously colored clouds. And sometimes we see airplanes running from one place to another. Thus the entire cosmic manifestation is full of variety, but actually that variety is a manifestation of the external energy of the Supreme Lord, and that energy is situated in Him. Now the Lord Himself, after manifesting His energy, appeared within this creation of His energy, which is simultaneously one with and different from Him. And therefore the demigods offered their respects to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who manifests Himself in such varieties. Let that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is understood by truly authorized Vedic literature, and who has created peace and prosperity to destroy all calamities of the created world, let Him be kind enough to bestow His glance upon the demigods. His merciful glance can supersede the beauty of the spotless lotus flower, which is the home of the goddess of fortune. A short purport by Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the origin of the cosmic manifestation, is covered by the wonderful activities of material nature. Just as outer space or the illumination of the sun and moon is sometimes covered by clouds or dust, it is very difficult to find the origin of the cosmic manifestation. Therefore, material scientists conclude that nature is the ultimate cause of all manifestations. But from Shastra or authentic literature like Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic scriptures, we understand that behind this wonderful cosmic manifestation is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in order to maintain the regular procedures of the cosmic manifestation and to be visible to the eyes of persons who are in the mode of goodness, the Lord appears. He is the cause of the creation and the dissolution of the cosmic manifestation. The demigods therefore prayed for His merciful glance upon them in order to be blessed. O Vidura, Maitreya said, thus the demigods worship with prayers the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appearing as the sage Naranarayan. The Lord glanced upon them with mercy and then departed for Gandhamandana Hill. That Naranarayan Rishi, who is a partial expansion of Krishna, has now appeared in the dynasty of Yadu and Kuru in the forms of Krishna and Arjuna, respectfully, to mitigate the burden of the world. So they have, actually Maitreya is saying this knowing that Krishna has actually already left the planet. Narayan is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is Prabhupada's purport. And Nara is a part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan. Thus the energy and the energetic together are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Maitreya informed Vidura that Nara, the portion of Narayan, had appeared in the family of the Kurus, and that Narayan, the plenary expansion of Krishna, had come as Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with the purpose of delivering suffering humanity from the pangs of material burdens. In other words, Narayan Rishi was now present in the world in the forms of Krishna and Arjuna. Then there's the in text 60-64, there's the Svaha, one of the daughters, one of the 16 daughters, I think. They were married to the 64 fire gods. 64? No. So many fire gods. And then finally, 49 fire gods. And then finally, to conclude the chapter, Svada, who was offered to the Pittas, begot two daughters named Vayuna and Dharani, both of whom were impersonalists and were expert in transcendental and Vedic knowledge. The 16th daughter, whose name was Sati, was the wife of Lord Shiva. She could not produce a child, so all these others, everyone who's been described, had children. Now Sati, the wife of Lord Shiva, she did not have any children. Although she always faithfully engaged in the service of her husband. The reason is that Sati's father Daksha used to rebuke Lord Shiva in spite of Shiva's faultlessness. Consequently, before attaining a mature age, Sati gave up her body by dint of mystic yoga power. So after hearing this, so this ends... That's the 66th verse, and that ends this first chapter of the daughters, the descendants of the daughters of Swayambhuva Manu. And this one, this last one that's been described, who is the daughter of Prasuti Akuti Devahuti. So Prasuti was married to Daksha, and they had 16 daughters, and one of them, Sati, was given to Lord Shiva in marriage, and she didn't produce any children. And rather, why? Because she gave up her body, because her father Daksha had criticized the faultless Lord Shiva. So now in the next chapter, which will begin tomorrow, Vidura is going to inquire why Daksha, who was so affectionate towards his daughter, why was he envious of Lord Shiva? Lord Shiva is the greatest personality. Vaishnavaram yatashambhu. He's a great devotee, so powerful in incarnation, a guna avatar incarnation of the Lord. So how could Daksha become so angry at him and so critical of him that Sati, his daughter, would kill herself? Commit suicide. So Madhura is going to ask about this, and this pastime, the explanation of this and the result of this, goes on to chapter 7, which will begin tomorrow. We'll begin chapter 2 tomorrow. Thank you. Any questions or comments? What are aeroplanes?
Yes.
What are aeroplanes?
I know what aeroplanes are now, but I fancy jumbo 747
that's flying around. Yeah. No, these aeroplanes, the word is biman. They are powered not by kerosene and jet fuel and heavy metal, and they're not powered by that at all, but by more subtle means. So this we find in many of the Vedic literatures in the Bhagavatam, there's going to be aeroplanes. But they're not like these kind of aeroplanes. They're neither propeller nor jet driven. They're sometimes powered by mantra. Sometimes they're flower, made out of flowers. Pretty good, huh? So I can't really say much more about that, no.
Wow.
Huh? Flower power, exactly. Good point.
Maybe they have water plane nowadays.
Water planes?
When there's fire in the bush or something.
But the planes aren't made out of water. That's the difference. They carry water. Any other deep philosophical questions? Thank you very much. Tomorrow we'll continue. Canto 4. Srimad Bhagavatam Kida Shri Prabhupada.